Hello, this is Eddie Duke. Welcome to the weekly podcast at Panther Creek Baptist Church. You know, Jesus Christ is an amazing person. As I look at our culture today, I'm convinced the absolute only hope for this world in which we live is Jesus Christ. And every week, I will introduce you to messages that will communicate this hope that we have in Christ. I'm thankful that you've taken the time to catch us here this week. It means a lot to me that you would tune in, and I would love to hear from you. And now, here is this week's broadcast.
This morning we have Miss Amy Goffinette here. We have all of Amy Goffinette's children. If you're one of Amy Goffinette's children, please raise your hand this morning. Yes, plenty of them here. I don't think they're done yet. I'm just kidding. But we're thankful for Amy and for Travis and their family for being here this morning. Amy has become a very, very dear friend of mine. I've known Amy because of the Stevens group. If in Hancock County, if you hear the last name Stevens, you know exactly who you're talking about if you're from Hancock County. So I always knew Amy, but I got the chance to work with her at Hallsville in the intern stage before I actually came here, and I got to play with Amy and the praise team there, and I have grown to just love Amy and her family so much because they mean the absolute world to me. But one thing that is so cool about Amy is that one thing she wants to make sure of today is that God receives all the honor and the glory from her testimony today. So Amy Goffinette, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Amy, for being here with us.
Hard to follow that up. Good morning. So as he said, my name is Amy Goffinette, and I'm married to Travis. My maiden name was Quisenberry, and my dad is in the mom and dad are in the back. Finally see her. She's hiding back there. And my Aunt Jacqueline Stevens is here with us as well. So I always have a hard time starting. I was raised in a Christian home. I knew who Jesus was from the time I knew my own name. And I met a man who also loved Jesus. And we talked about adoption from the time we talked about marriage. He is adopted, and he dated a girl previous that her whole family was adopted from a refugee camp in Laos. So we had all of these ideas of adoption, but we were going to do it later after we had our own kids. And God knew better. And we had been married for 7 years, and we were taking in a little fellow who's not with us today, whose parents weren't involved in his life, and he was our first baby. He was our trial kid, I guess. He's now 13, almost 14 years old, and he's not with us today. But we got to love on him, and then after 7 years of marriage, I found myself getting ready to have a baby. Travis said, ask him what happened. And she's like, you don't ask what happens. When you finally get there, you just accept that God did something. So if you want to move to the next slide, this is what we looked like in 2013. We have our borrowed kid, our two bio kids, and our two adopted from foster care kids there. And when Jenna, the baby that we're holding between us, was born, we were done. I was satisfied with the number of children in our home. Travis was done, and we were okay with that, but I got a diagnosis that I thought meant I was going to end up in a wheelchair at some point, and then I started seeing these kids online who were in wheelchairs, and I thought, we could maybe adopt one of those, and I said something to Travis, and he grunted. He did not even give me a verbal response. It was a grunt, and I knew, having been married to him at that point for 13 years, that no amount of nagging was going to elicit anything different from me than the grunt. So I was okay with that, I thought. And then on January 8th, 2014, on the NBC Nightly News, this little girl shared her story. Now, my husband is a news junkie. He doesn't watch sports. He likes to hunt and fish and do those things. But every night, our DVR is set to record three different news broadcasts. And he comes home and he watches them at whatever time. So he watches this broadcast of the NBC Nightly News, Jackson's birthday. And he says, come here, you got to watch this. And he replayed it. And I saw this little girl. Her name is Ngaiso Shekina. And she had a horrible story. She watched her mom get killed and the Celica, the bad guys, or Anti-Balica, had killed her mother, her father, her brother, her sister, and her grandparents. And she said, I held my hands to God, and I said, please. And they killed her anyway. And I saw what I see on the news every night when he watches the news. We live in a horrible, horrible world, full of sin and full of Satan getting his way. And this man who was done and grunting at me turned and looked at me and said, we have to adopt her. That was on a Wednesday night. And I don't know if you've ever attempted to find somebody that you see on TV who's on the other side of the world, but it's not easy. So he comes home from work on Friday and he says, have you found her yet? This was Wednesday that it happened. And he came home on Monday and he said, have you found her yet? And he wasn't grabbing my shirt, but there was an intensity in his words that made it very clear that he was not getting past this or over this. It was not a passing thing. So if you'll, the next slide is a quote from David Platt. And he says a lot of things that tend to step on my toes. He says, God actually delights in exalting our inability. He intentionally puts his people in situations where they come face to face with their need for him. There is no way on the face of this earth that I could have gone anywhere and found this child. To be honest, I didn't even know where the Central African Republic was, and I was pretty sure I'd never heard of it. But Travis came home on that Monday and said, have you found her yet? And I said, no. And he said, what did you do? And I said, I tried NBC Nightly News. I tried Ann Curry. I tried working NBC 14 out of Evansville and working my way up. I don't know what to do. He said, well, wouldn't do it that way. I said, what would you do? He said, I would try to find somebody who has an orphanage in the country and have them find her. Makes sense. So Google search, 45 minutes, 3 phone calls later, I'm on the phone with Carter Strand that you watched the video about in Iowa, who just happens to have an orphanage in the country. A few facts about CAR. If you look around it, I don't know if you can tell there, it is surrounded by Chad and Congo and the Democratic Republic of Congo and Sudan and South Sudan. And it's not a great place to live and to grow up. It's the third to last in the prosperity index. Only Afghanistan and Yemen are behind it. And it is number one on the global hunger index. This country that you've never heard of, that never makes U.S. news, is one of the most desperate places on the planet. So, Carter had a man looking for her, and a long, 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 long story shorter, 1 year later, to the day, after I got this picture, because we were looking for the little girl from the news broadcast. Carter had someone looking for her, and we found her. But we were told by the organization taking care of her that they would not allow us to adopt her, and they would not tell her family that we wanted to. She had one living great aunt caring for her, and their goal was to keep families together. So the same day, right before I got that news, I got this picture of three little girls at the orphanage who had nobody else caring for them except orphanage staff. They each had grandmothers who had brought them to the orphanage. And this is the picture of their first day at the orphanage in November of 2013. So in January 19th of 2014, I saw this picture for the first time. In January 19th of 2015, exactly 1 year to the day later, my plane touched down in Africa. Now, the next slide shows you, this is, the white parts there are the Central African Republic. The capital of Bangui down in the bottom, that is where planes fly into. If you'll go up into the east, Sibute, if you see that up there, that's the town where the orphanage is. That is 120 miles. And if you see Damara in between, the word is off to the left there. The area between Bangui and Damara is controlled by a group called the Anti-Balica. And 2 days before I touched down, their leader had been captured, and we were told that they were looking for 30 pale people to exchange for their leader because they thought that was a good number to exchange for someone who was important. I'm pale. Carter's pale. That's kind of hard to hide, especially in Africa when we were the minority. So we're sitting in the compounds where we're safe, and Carter says, "What do you think? Do you think we should try it?" I'm from Kentucky. I don't know. But God knew. And in my devotional that morning, on the next slide, it says, it's Jesus Calling by Sarah Young. And the January 21st, it took me 2 days to get to where we were ready to go to the orphanage. He says, "I want you to be all mine. I am weaning you from your dependencies. Your security rests in me alone. I am always before you, beckoning you on one step at a time. The eternal God, your refuge, and underneath are everlasting arms. He will drive out your enemy from before you, saying, 'Destroy him.'" Tell me how appropriate that is. He will drive out your enemy from before you. Deuteronomy 33:27. And then in Romans 8, "Neither height nor depth nor anything else in creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord." Now, this was my morning devotional, but I had also picked up a Priscilla Shire study in the church that we went to in Chicago before I flew out. And that morning study on that was talking about all the martyrs who'd gone before. So between thinking, okay, God wants us to go, but we might die because of it. And it was a really, I can laugh about it now, but it was real and it was scary. And Carter's asking my opinion because we're the only two that went on this trip. And I know it was God because I'm not that smart, but if you've ever heard, I knew I'd lose a name if I didn't write it down. The gentleman who was killed by the Aka Indians, Jim Elliott, who was killed by the Aka Indians, witnessing to them, said, "Anybody who hangs on to what's going to go away anyway is going to lose it, but you've got to understand that there's a greater good." And I told him, we were probably safer going on this path, if that's the way God wanted us to go, than we would be sitting at our houses in America. Because if God's in it, then who can be against us, right? So we knew we weren't completely, we knew we couldn't do it on our own. We knew we were not safe hopping in a vehicle and driving on our own. So we were waiting for a convoy. And the man in charge in Africa, Leonard, had found a convoy from the UN that was going to that direction. It was going on past where we were going. So we were going to jump into this convoy. So we went to the French outpost. The French military was there. This used to be a French nation up until 1960 when they gained their independence. So in the same way that we go into other countries and try to defend them, the French military was there trying to keep peace and trying to keep people safe. So we stopped at this French outpost, and it was a little intimidating. You're in this little walled area, and there's barbed wire and razor wire, and there's a little gate for people to come through, but there's guys in this little bunker with their guns just waiting to see if anything crazy is going to happen. There's a street, and across the street is more barbed wire and a market. And I'd asked to go to the market because I wanted to see what's there. You know, I've never been to Africa. I wanted to experience something of it. And I finally got my way with a military escort, but they didn't feel like it was safe for me to even walk across the street by myself. So we sit down, and we've been there for a couple hours. The convoy hasn't shown up yet. And we're thinking, why are we waiting? Why are we waiting? Because the longer you wait, the darkness hits about 6 o'clock every night, year-round. They don't go anywhere after dark. You stay home after dark, and you go in your compound. So the longer we waited, the less the chance that we would be able to go that night. So we're waiting, and we're waiting, and we're wondering why we're waiting. And there's these little orphans I've seen playing in the street. And this one little girl, if you show the picture there of Lorraine, came up just as they gave us a box of rations. And my fear was that if I gave her some of my rations, that there'd be an onslaught of orphans running up, causing chaos, and then maybe the French military. I didn't know how happy they got with their guns. And I didn't want to cause any chaos. So she comes in, and she's talking to the lieutenant, who speaks French and Sango, and he spoke English well enough to speak to us. And I'm expecting her to want our food, and she says to him, "Can I get clean?" And he turns and looks at me and said, "Will you give her a bath? Welcome to Africa." And I'm my mouth probably was hanging open. And he said, "We have showers in the back, but I don't have clothes or towels or anything like that." So the trip had changed since I first went over. I thought I was going over initially to get my girls, and some things changed, and I thought I was going to go visit them for 3 weeks or maybe even a week, and then coming home. And so I only had packed 3 outfits, one for each of my girls. So I went out there, and I took Benny's outfit, and I got bar soap, and I got my towel, and I went and attempted to get her clean. And she showed me that I wasn't scrubbing. I tried to get her clothes done after I got her clean, and she was showing me I wasn't scrubbing hard enough with the soap to get the clothes clean, but I don't think you could have gotten the clothes clean with any amount of soap. And while I was in there giving this child a bath, I could not help but think about the first orphan that Carter took into the orphanage, because Abu had been working in a kitchen, which doesn't mean what it means here. He's cooking on a fire. He's washing dishes outside the kitchen. And his pay for doing that job was he got the scraps of food that came back off the plates. Now, when I've already told you it's the poorest nation in the world, there's not much food that comes back off a plate. So they took this child in. They said, "Would you like to go to an orphanage?" I was like, "Okay." So he goes. They said, "Okay, now you can play basketball. You can play soccer. You can do anything you want to do. What do you want to do first?" And he said, "Can I get clean?" And that was playing in the back of my mind because I already knew that story. And Lorraine asking to get clean, I thought, she's got to go to the orphanage. I don't know her story. I don't know what we'd have to do to make it happen. It's 120 miles away. She has to go with us. Carter already had it worked out. While I was giving her a bath, he was talking. The military, if you'll show the next slide, these are the guys that were protecting this little girl. One of them in particular had seen her being picked on by the bigger orphans. And she pretty well, after I gave her a bath, I realized she pretty well had the run of the place. She walked up to a person, just looked at them, they hand over their sandwich. She walked up to somebody else and looked at them, they handed her a bottle of Coke. I saw that child, who was this tall, eat that much sandwich while we were walking around. So Leonard, the guy on the far right, asked her, "Would you like to go to an orphanage?" And she squealed and she hugged him. And then like an hour later, she said, "If I go, will I get food every day?" On the next slide, you see the before and after pictures of us leaving in the car. She didn't know us. She didn't know how long and difficult the 120-mile road was. She didn't know where she was going. She only had the hope of the promise of food. On the next slide, it's right after we got to the orphanage. And that's Carter. And that's him getting accosted by about 18 kids. And I took the picture and it made me smile. And then I got home and I was talking to another adoptive mom and she said, "Do your kids have a hard time hugging?" And I thought, well, yeah, actually they do. They kind of do a lean thing. But to actually put your arms around someone and squeeze on them like we do here, it's not African at all. This wasn't a hug. This was the first time that Carter had met any of these kids. And that was their gratitude for taking them from where they were to that house. That was absolute positive joy at where they are. They're in an orphanage. And when we think orphanage, we think very bad place to try to get kids out of. These children are loved. These children are taught about Jesus. These children sing. If you heard some of the on the video, you heard them singing and saw them dancing around. We would be working, and somebody would just start singing, and here came a whole bunch of other people joining in. It is. We had a conversation. Carter came to our house and spoke at our church once, right before we got home with our girls. And we had a discussion, you know, because no kids before ours had ever been adopted from the orphanage. Only two had ever been adopted from that country to the United States, period. So we had this discussion, if we can't get them out, if I can get some out, or if we can't get them out at all, do we leave them at the orphanage? Or do we try to take them to France or somewhere where we're not sure they're going to be in a Christian home? And we decided we'd leave them at the orphanage because they're loved, they're cared for, the money goes a long way. It's a good place. The next slide shows Lorraine's first day of school ever. She got her uniform. She got to go to school. She got to play teacher for a second and let her lead through there. But the violence in the country has been such, the public schools had been shut down for 3 years. So the only school that was available was the school that the orphanage had started. At the time that I was there, there were about 200 students present, and there are currently about 300 getting an education. All the orphans at the orphanage and all the orphans that have been brought in into other families that are being cared for outside of the orphanage can go for free. Like we said, it's really hard to live there. And the next picture shows on the Saturday that I was there, the night before, they had had the first death of a student from the school. And so we were all to meet at the school and take a picture. The worm medicine is a 3-day thing. So in order to get them to come in on a Saturday, they had to eat with it. So everybody took their nasty worm medicine pill. Then they got a piece of bread. And the promise was I had a huge bag of dum-dum suckers. And so if they came back for the third day in their uniforms, they would get the bread and the dum-dum sucker, and we got to take their picture. But when we learned that one of the students had passed away, all the students lined up, and we all walked down the road to this house where this child was. And you can see in the next picture his little brother sitting in the doorway crying. The child and his mother, there was a bed set up behind that tent. The child and his mother were there. His father was off to the right of the house. The next slide shows all the people that had come and just sat, just to be with them. The little boy was 12. He was the oldest child in the home. He got sick and he died. There's no way to know what killed him. There's no autopsy. There's no doctor. They die and you bury them. And that's it. This was on Saturday. The French military were camped out at... They had set up camp at the bottom of the hill where the orphanage is. And we had spoken with them earlier in the week, hoping that they would be traveling back or they would be sending somebody in the direction of the capital when we needed to go back, because we knew we left and we got left behind by the UN. They basically got past the last gate and took off and left us. So we knew going back with the gates being at the end of the journey this time, we would have to have a real escort. And it was a concern. It was a real concern. And God didn't only provide us with an escort. There were armored vehicles in front of us all the way there. They drove Carter straight to the airport. The guys in front of me in that Jeep, the white vehicle is ours. The guys in front of us in that Jeep, that guy stood up. We stopped one time during it so everybody could take a potty break and rest and stand down. The guy in the back of the Jeep there stood up the entire time with a gun resting on the back of that Jeep, looking in both directions. And every time a kid would run out toward the road, he'd throw out rations to the kids. So they took Carter straight to the airport, and he was getting to come home. But I was still trying to figure out if I was going to be able to come home with my girls. And so we went and stayed in the capital, and we had two more days before we flew to the country where we would be able to process the rest of their adoption. And the next picture is the first one I had made with them. I hadn't had any made at the orphanage. And the girls look thrilled with me, don't they? They weren't too sure about this crazy lady. time went on. U.S. was very slow, and some people there not very cooperative. And the next picture is us in Easter, is still in Cameroon. Like I said, I arrived January 19th, expecting to stay for a maximum of 3 weeks. I had been told by the adoption lady that because of the snag and because of the issues, she thought she could make it another maybe 10 days and I would be home. So 2 months later, here's a picture. And we finally got our visa interview on April 21st of 2015. It was a Tuesday. And I know it was a Tuesday because I knew exactly where my American kids and my husband were. They were at the very last day of, I don't know how many of you know what Classical Conversations is, but that was the Christian curriculum for homeschooling that we use with our kiddos. And that was the last day of their classes. And they were there, and my oldest, Chloe, was having to do her presentation where she was dressed up as a character. And I knew if I had to share any bad news, I didn't want to do it. I wanted it just to be a happy day where they were celebrating the last day with their friends. And so I didn't text my bad news, because when I went to the embassy for that visa interview, they said, everything looks great. However, since you're in another country and your adoption actually took place in Central Africa, it might be as much as 2 more months that you'll be here. I'd already been there 3. But Travis also knew where I was, and he was texting me. He's like, what happened? You've got to know, because we're 7 hours ahead. So by the time they get there, my stuff was pretty well done. And so I had to tell him. They said I might be here 2 more months. And I had a dear sweet friend who was running that campus. I was supposed to be in charge of the campus when I got stuck over there. So I had a dear sweet friend who was running that campus for me. And on this side of the world, she was praying, unbeknownst to my new friend in Africa, who was also praying, specifically, not Lord, get her home. Lord, make it 2 days instead of 2 months. I didn't know about any of this until I got home. Both of them specifically prayed 2 days, not 2 months. Wednesday, I get a phone call from the embassy on my cell phone. Drop the call, of course. Made the taxi driver pull over and said, okay. She called me back. She called me back like twice before I finally made a connection. She said, you're not going to believe this. I said, please don't mess with me. She said, I would not mess with you. We have the confirmation from Central Africa, everything's good. I said, so you need passports. She said, I need your passports. She said, I can't promise it'll be this week, but we're going to try for Friday. Thursday, 2 days later, she called and said, I have your passports. You can come pick them up. I think God left us there for that long so that when he worked, everybody had no question. He knew I needed time to bond with those kids. He knew that if I came home, I would be so busy with being the director of a Classical Conversations community and being a wife and being a mom to now 7 or 8 kids that they might get mixed, lost in the shuffle. And they needed that time with me. I needed that time with them to get to know who they were and to get to know their personalities. They were just learning who I was. And I was just learning who God was. So, in December of 2015, we made it doubly official and readopted them in the United States, and that's the picture for that day. It means a lot to me just because it was hard, but it's a reminder of how wonderfully God can work. And then they got their U.S. citizenship papers. And they are official U.S. citizens, just like me and you. And if you'll look at the next slide, it shows the first picture at their first day of the orphanage versus the first day of school in 2015. Same kids, same order, different smile. When we left the orphanage, there were 15 children. The orphanage was originally set up for 12. And as Carter said, you know, we took three and there's room for three more. However, there are now 30 there. And Jacob's alluded to my theme song several times this morning. But if you know who Matthew West is, he has a song called Do Something. And it was kind of my theme song for this whole adoption. I couldn't hear it for 9 to 12 months without crying every time it came on. So I'm going to read you the words. It says, I woke up this morning, saw a world full of trouble now, thought how we'd got so far down, how's it ever going to turn around? So I turned my eyes to heaven and thought, God, why don't you do something? Well, I just couldn't bear the thought of people living in poverty and children sold into slavery. The thought disgusted me, so I shook my fist at heaven and said, God, why don't you do something? And he said, I did. I created you. If not us, then who? If not me and you, right now, it's time to do something. If not now, then when will we ever see an end to all this pain? It's not enough to do nothing. It's time for us to do something. I'm so tired of talking about how we are God's hands and feet, but it's easier to say than to be. We live like angels of apathy who tell ourselves, it's all right. Somebody else will do something. I don't know about you, but I'm sick and tired of life with no desire. I don't want a flame. I want a fire. I want to be the one who stands up and says, I'm going to do something. We're the salt of the earth. We're a city on a hill. But we're never going to change the world by standing still. If not us, then who? If not me and you? Right now, it's our time to do something. If not now, then when will we see an end to all this pain? It's not enough to do nothing. We have to do something. And just because our journey ended for this adoption, the orphanage keeps moving. The next slide shows Tony and Marie Solange. Both of their mothers died within 2 weeks of each other. They're cousins. So their elderly grandmother was caring for both of them. Tony's little legs, I'm told he's about three, and he had never walked. Marie Solange was not walking. So they put him on, they got consent from the grandmothers that she could not care for them any longer, and they put him on the back of a motorcycle, and they carried him to the orphanage. They took them to the clinic that was available and had them weighed, and you can see Tony's little scrawny legs coming out the bottom of that one on the left, and Marie Solange fighting to get out on the right. But if you look at them in a more recent picture, they're doing just fine. LSA was so malnourished, he had a head wound that had not healed for months. If you can see there his hair, how it's all not grown in, that's a sign of malnourishment as well. That's his home there with the big gap under the door and the big gap all along the side and the book that they gave him. But with good nutrition, care, and love, LSA, which is Elijah in English, is doing well. In addition to taking in orphans, the orphanage and the staff and the surrounding people have got the school that we talked about. But they've also started just this year a medical clinic. And it wasn't available when the house fell on Anatole. This was a widow whose husband had had seizures and ended up falling in the fire and dying from the burns. The house, in heavy rains, fell down upon them. And Anatole had a compound fracture of his leg. Bone was sticking out. There was nothing within 9 hours of them. There was no way that they could go anywhere. There was no way they could pay for medical treatment. There's no credit in Africa. You pay cash for everything. So if you don't have money, you can't get services. You might barter and exchange for food, but for real services, you pay cash. So the fracture in his leg meant certain death. But with help from JHO, medical care was given. Anatole's leg and life were saved. And thanks to generous donations, his widow mother and siblings have a house that is safe for them to live in. A member of the orphanage staff went to work with locals. People donated money, and they built her a new sturdy house. There's also a basketball outreach program. There they are with some of the balls that have seen better days. But it's similar to Upward Basketball that we have here. And they come and they practice throughout the week. And on Saturday they come and someone gives a message about Jesus. And they play basketball. And they love it. They're not any good. But they love it and they have fun. The next picture shows eating time at the orphanage. They would share plates. The girl, there's usually, when I was there, there were 15 to 18 kids. And they would share three tables. And they would take turns eating. So everybody gets a bite. And then they go around. And then everybody gets another bite. They're sharing Christ, and they're having baptisms. And this is one of the baptisms of one of the kiddos. And the next slide shows the six kids that were baptized in December of 2015. Next two slides are some pictures. Those are all the kids at the orphanage when I was there, all 18 of them, including some of mine. And the next slide shows some of the first kids at the orphanage. It started with the boy in the left. That was the one I told you who wanted to get clean. Abu in the white, and then Roderick in the blue, and Abby in the red came next, and then Moisette and Baldwin. So they have grown. That's about 2013, so that's about a four-year-old picture. Everything in Africa, especially in Central African Republic, is harder. The next picture shows them making the basketball court that they play on. They take boulders, they beat them to a pulp with a hammer, and then they mix concrete a little bit at a time to make the basketball court. Next picture shows them on the basketball court with leftover Upward jerseys to play games. The school children all came for the worms medicine, and we got a picture of them before they left. Next picture shows the school and the children, and they all greeted us. They all stood up and greeted us as we walked in to show respect. We've talked a lot about what I did or what God did when I was there, but what does he actually say about it? This picture is a plaque that someone gave us after we got home with the girls. I will not leave you as orphans. I will come for you. In James chapter 1, it says, "Religion that God, our Father, accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world." And I've heard that, and I've heard it so many times. What I didn't realize, that just five verses before that, in verse 22, was my theme song. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourself. Do what it says. Do something. We were called to adopt. And I know that's not what everybody's called to do. I've had little ladies at other churches. I spoke at Carter's church after the girls got home. And I had a little lady that was probably 80. She said, "Oh, honey, I just wish I could, but I know I'm too old." She said, "I just want to adopt." So what else can you do? You can sponsor. They take in kids as the need arises. You never know when it's going to arise. You never know what the need's going to be. So they've taken in children who had medical needs and got those medical needs taken care of and got them back to nurturement and sent them back to living relatives. They have taken in siblings. There's a picture there, I believe, the picture of the girl on the bottom in the white. She was fine and dandy, but her little brother, they had been hiding in the forest for 7 months, and her little brother was near starvation. He was 18 months old when they took him in. So she came with him to help care for him. And she's getting a free education. She's not up for adoption because in Central Africa, if you have a daughter, you get a dowry for her. So she is more valuable to her father to stay there than to be adopted, even though there is a family that was willing to take both her and her two-year-old brother now. Maybe God is calling you to adopt. I didn't think we were going to adopt. I worked DCS before I was a stay-at-home mom. And I thought, why would anybody ever leave the country to get a kid? There are so many here that need parents. And then I saw why. Because they literally have nothing. Sometimes food is a mud cake to keep your belly full. Not at the orphanage, but before the orphanage. We were the first people to adopt from the orphanage. Got home April of 2015. In July of 2016, these three boys came home to these two parents. And they are, be praying for them. I haven't heard today. They are in the path of the hurricane. So be praying for them. It's the Farrell family. And it's so, God's timing's always perfect. Jacob asking me to come today. The next slide shows you the four children that got to be forever with their families last night and are waking up today to be with them forever. The two little ones are going together. They're the cousins that I showed you who had the leg issues. And then the older two are half-sisters, and they're going to a single lady who wants to be a mom in Iowa, and she has fought for them so hard. Abby has been at the orphanage. She was one of the first five, and her sister Grace came within the last year and a half or 2 years. So they get to go home on Tuesday. They will be in Iowa on Wednesday, meeting their extended families. Kids that are still there now, there are 30. And the next, there's a picture of them getting ready to go to school in the morning, but the next three slides show their profile pictures that were taken by a professional photographer. The video was done by professional videographers who do that as a ministry. They work Amazing Race and other big name things. When they have downtime, they use their resources to go do stuff like that for free to shed light on not-for-profits. So you can adopt, you can sponsor, and you can give. That is a house. The value of a dollar there is phenomenal. Money goes a long way. It really does. There's a picture of some of the orphans in Njoku that they've helped with. If you can see the little guy on the far right, it's turned backwards. He's got something wrapped around him because he didn't have clothes, and he didn't want to stand in the picture with no clothes. So someone's handed him something to wrap around him. The others, some on the left, those are just giant shirts. You wear what you've got. It may work, it may not work, but that's what they have. It's hard to understand the desperation of some of these people. When Carter went over for that first trip, he said he had mothers coming up to him and begging him to take their children because they knew they'd be better off with a white man who had money. Whatever he did with them, they would have food, and they were trying to give away their children. And that, to me, is really hard to understand. But if you really, really loved somebody, and you knew they might die if you continued to take care of them, and somebody else might be able to keep them alive. But on the other end of the spectrum, there are people who are so desperate or who are so worn down that they make some really, really stupid choices. And there's a little boy named Christopher whose mother remarried, had a new baby, and didn't want to have to take care of a special needs child anymore. Christopher's legs don't work very well. He can only use one hand. And so she took him and she put him behind the outhouse at the school after. It's a summer break. There's not school going on. He was in the tall weeds. And she left them there on a Monday. And somebody heard something, and he's also tongue-tied, so he can't talk. He makes noises from his throat. They found him on Saturday. And they rushed him to the hospital. And he was on a feeding unit for a week. And or two, and they got him past the point of not dying. And that sitting beside him is a new picture of Christopher now. Who knew that smile was in there? I don't think his mom did. I don't think he's ever had a reason to smile before. So, in order to take care of more needs like Christopher's. There was a building that had been a medical clinic way back in the day. And JHO, Jonathan's House for Orphans, partnered with another organization who was wanting to have medical equipment, medical things done. And in May of this year, they opened their doors to the new medical clinic. There is a doctor and a nurse provided by the joint funds from JHO and this other non-for-profit organization. You can see the next line, we're passing out worm medicine. You can see how long that line is behind them. And if you can't, you could look at where they were lined up there on the basketball court. 900 doses. How can you imagine? When I was there, we were handing them out to the kids, and one of the teachers comes up and said, "Can I have some?" To know you have worms and to not be able to do anything about it. We saw the video. We saw them pumping water with their feet. Way up that hill behind her is where the orphanage sits. And on the last trip, they were able to work out a way to have a pump bring the water up from the bottom of the hill to the top of the hill. And they're hoping this trip to get water in there for showers and baths and such. So if you can't go and you can't adopt and you can't give, you can absolutely positively pray. I am traveling back. I never thought it would happen, but because of the generous friends, family, church members, we have gotten money to take all three girls back to visit their families. I was not told by the director of the orphanage that he had promised them I would take them to see their grandmas before we left. And so by the time they got good English, they said, "Mom, why did you not take us to see our families?" I was like, "I didn't know I was supposed to. I didn't know. I'm so sorry." And so we get to go back and help at the orphanage on a mission trip in a week and a half. And we are so excited. So you can volunteer. You can pray for us while we're there. It was my point, sorry. You can pray for us while we're there. Pray for safe travel. There are 16 people going. One of those is a pediatric surgeon who probably work on Christopher, if he's able to at least loosen his tongue so he can start learning how to talk. There is a great need. And there are people going to adopt. There are people going to help. There is one dear sweet lady who was in the Army with Carter many moons ago. And she went over on the July trip with some other people to do trauma counseling, to do those things that you saw in the video. And I thought she was coming back with us whenever we leave in a couple, 3 weeks. And she's decided she's going to stay longer because there's more that needs to be done and she can help do it. So be praying for her. Her name is Denise, and she's having a hard time adjusting to cooking over a fire and having no electricity. And all of those things, but she's willing to stay. She wants to stay. She feels led to stay. And she is pale, so that's always an issue. You can help volunteer by raising donations, finding donors to take items to the orphanage, working on a mission trip to the orphanage, finding new ways that we haven't thought of. This is still a new venture. Carter went over there for the first time in 2011, went over in 2012 and fixed up the house some, and went over back with me in 2015. Everybody in the U.S. makes the same salary. I have been named in the last 3 weeks the adoption coordinator, and I make the same amount as the president of the organization. Isn't that awesome? Zero. In a couple weeks, I'll be standing up in front of probably this church in Africa, and they want to know what's going on over here and what people do over here and why we bother to come all the way around the world to help these people. It's weird to them. They're used to doing everything on their own. Got another David Platt quote before I finish. "Don't pass up the opportunity. It's easy to miss the blessing. But then I realize, there's never going to be a day when I stand before God and he looks at me and says, 'Wish you would have kept more for yourself.' I'm confident that God will take care of me." God has called us all to do something. Thank you, guys.
Hey, Hey, this is Eddie Duke, pastor at Panther Creek Baptist Church. I hope this message was a blessing for you today. I want to let you know that we here at Panther Creek are a small church that are looking to make a big impact on our neighbors in our community with the love of Christ. If you're looking for a church home with which to serve and connect with, we would love to have you join us on Sunday mornings at 9:30 for Sunday school and 10:30 for church. We'd also love to have you join us on Sunday evenings at 6:30. But if you can't join us, we hope you'll tune in every week and listen to us. Have a fantastic day.